What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Mater Private. Trust Ireland's leading private hospitals with locations nationwide, including Dublin, Cork and Limerick.
This is News Talk.
It happens. Professor Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin, is on the line. Luke, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How's it going?
It's going very well. Now, we'll talk the good news on vaccines, and we'll talk about Slovakia, which is doing something very interesting in a moment. But do you want to take Dave's question, first of all, about the lowering, I suppose, of antibody levels fairly quickly?
Yeah, it was known already, Pat. It's a big study, that, though, which is very... The UK can do great science, as we know, and a lot of people looked at. And antibodies wane. Now, we've known this before, you know, after an infection, antibodies will spike and then begin to go away. Now, the question is, will the low-level antibodies that remain, will they protect you? That's the first question. And then secondly, there's also these T-cells. They may still be there. So it's still somewhat unanswered. If you read that paper closely, Pat, what they say is when the vaccine comes along, we need a boost. You know, in other words, a vaccine might give you 6 to 9 months protection, and then we need a second shot after that. That's the worst case scenario, you know. So, but this isn't unexpected, really.
Yeah. In any event, if enough people get vaccinated, then the virus has nowhere to go. It can't find people to infect, and therefore it just vanishes from the community until someone brings it in again, and then we all get vaccinated again.
Exactly. 6 months protection is good with vaccines. I mean, it'd be better if it was lifelong protection would be the best. But short-term protection isn't the worst thing. Because as you say, Pat, if enough people are vaccinated, then the virus begins to go away, you know. So these things aren't especially worrying, I don't think.
Now, there is lots of vaccine news, and the results from AstraZeneca are particularly encouraging.
It's remarkable, Pat. I mean, this morning, I've never seen the like of all this vaccine news, which sort of illustrates how much effort is going into it. You've never seen the like of this frenzy around this. And one good one is AstraZeneca. They reported this yesterday. One big question, Pat, with vaccines is, will it work in older people? Because their immune systems aren't quite as active. There's evidence that the flu vaccine mightn't be as effective. They sometimes have to double and triple the dose of the flu vaccine in older people just to get it to work. So now what they're doing is lots of these trials are involving older people. And AstraZeneca have reported a strong response with their vaccine. And even more importantly, Pat, they had less what's called reactogenicity. You know, the way you get a slight fever, you might have pain where the injection is and so on. That was less in the older people than younger people, which is really good. So if this bears up, that would be a great selling point for AstraZeneca's vaccine. Same with the Pfizer vaccine, by the way. Over a third of the people on that trial have been older people, you know, and again, they're seeing responses in that old, over 65s. They're seeing a good antibody T-cell response. So these vaccines do seem to be working in older people, which is a great sign.
Now, there are a few others that we've come across. We know there are many, many candidates for the vaccine. What about Sinovac?
Yeah, that was good. What's happening is, Pat, data is being either leaked. Now, whether it's intentional or not is not clear, you know, but we're getting little hints from these trials that are running. I guess it's because everybody wants to know. Now, this can be a bit dangerous because you're supposed to reveal the data at the end of the trial just in case something happens during it. But Sinovac have just released their safety data. They gave their vaccine to 9,000 people and it was safe. And there's the first sign that that vaccine might be a very safe one. This is the phase 3 trial. It was done in Brazil, actually, that trial, where lots of viruses rampant, the Butantan Institute, it's called, which I know quite well, actually. So it's quite reliable, this. And they're saying that their vaccine is now said to be safe in 9,000 people. Now, again, that's good, Pat, because the technology they're using isn't that different to other vaccines. So if their vaccine is safe, that increases our confidence that the other vaccines might be safe as well.
The other name we're hearing all the time is Moderna. And there was a concern in the United States about the racial mix of the volunteers for the vaccine, because we know, and whether it's to do with social issues or whether it's to do with biology in some way, that African-American populations seem to be more vulnerable to COVID-19.
Yeah, there was a worry about this, that they're only vaccinating rich white people, if you will, you know, in the trials. Moderna are very careful. A third of the people vaccinated are non-white, as they call them, and that means Hispanics, who again are very more susceptible than white people are, and a third were over 65. So it's very interesting the way they balance that. 30,000 people have now been vaccinated with that Moderna vaccine, and I heard on Friday a leak. Again, I was the Wall Street Journal rang me up. That's how prominent I'm becoming, and I asked the journalist, and he'd heard. He said the leak from Moderna was it was safe. Isn't it interesting? So that looks like it might be safe. They're now moving ahead of Pfizer in the race. They're saying by mid-November they'll have all their data and they'll apply for emergency use with the FDA. And then that'll be great because now we'll have two vaccines if it all pans out, of course, by the end of November, where they'll have approval, you know. And then both of those then can start going into the vulnerable groups because, of course, what happens next is that they start giving it to the older people, of course, who are vulnerable, and then the healthcare workers go next, you know. So Moderna are now very punchy. They're saying they're ahead of the competition.
Now, it's one thing to have a vaccine that works and you've got enough doses for your 60,000 volunteers or whatever, because half of them might get the real thing and half of them will get a placebo. Then you've got to manufacture it for, if not the millions, the billions of people. So where are we in terms of preparedness to get it out to the masses?
Well, again, this is a remarkable one, and this was released last week. Pfizer have released their plan. If their vaccine works, and as we know, we should know towards the end of October, actually, is when their trial finishes. And then by the mid to late November, they'll have done all the safety, you know, analysis and so on, and then they apply for approval. Now, they must be confident, Pat, because they're building two huge factories, one in Kalamazoo, and one in Poor in Belgium to make 1.3 billion doses of their vaccine. And it's remarkable. But I mean, what gets me is this is the military. It's like the army going in, doing something, you know. They've already spent $2 billion on their vaccine, which is another thing to remember. It's all the money's gone into it. And they're really ramping up to produce all these doses now. And you'd have to say they must be confident. They must know something we don't. It's our suspicion. But it's a fascination that they've got thousands of freezers ready. They've already commissioned dozens of cargo jets with FedEx and DHL to ship the vaccine out when it's ready. And their CEO, who's been in the news a lot, Albert Bourla is his name, he said access to the vaccine is as important as, you know, it working. And obviously this is very much in their minds. So it's a massive military operation is underway already. Now remember, Pat, they haven't finished the trial yet. So it's certainly, you know, they've got confidence, haven't they, to be putting so much effort into it. And then meanwhile, the US has ordered 600 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine. The EU has got 200 million, and Ireland will have access to that. The Japanese have ordered 120 million doses, and the UK 30 million. So the order book is full for this first, if you will, batch of vaccine. But I think it's a very good sign that they're putting all this effort into the logistics now to get the vaccine out.
What did you make of the survey that suggested that only about 55% of people in Ireland would actually want to take the vaccine, and about 30% a bit unsure and 12% saying no?
It reminds me, Pat, of when U2 gave their album away, remember? And nobody wanted it. It's that kind of thing. You know, I mean, here we have the answer to this crisis is a vaccine. There's no question, right? You've never seen the amount of safety that's going into these trials. It's amazing. You've seen they've restarted. The Johnson & Johnson trial has restarted, which is a good sign. Of course, AstraZeneca has restarted in the US. So they're checking safety all along. So when the vaccine arrives, this will be the safest vaccine ever, is the prediction, because there's such a spotlight on it. And we understand vaccine hesitancy, but it's been going on for years, as we know. And you've got to reassure people all the time. It'll be a big effort now to reassure people, I think, get them to jump on board. We have to understand this reluctance because, I don't like the sound of this, it's being rushed, and all those worries in people's minds. Remember, Pat, with the polio vaccine in the 50s, they got Elvis to publicize it. So we need to think. I mean, obviously, they're on top of this. The WHO are getting ready to increase vaccine awareness and hope, because if people don't take the vaccine, then it's not quite for nothing, but it's certainly, you know, a bit disturbing, isn't it?
So who's today's Elvis? That's the question. I mean, Taylor Swift in the news, yeah. She sold 1 million albums this year. Maybe she is the icon for younger people. Who's the older candidate? Is it Bruce, the boss? You know,
it has to be Bruce, and he's in the right demographic, Pat, isn't he, as well? He's over 70, isn't he? So he'd be perfect, wouldn't he? But again, they're planning this to get the vaccine information out there. Now, again, you need to be... The vaccines aren't there yet. I keep saying this. We have to wait till these trials are done, you know, and we see efficacy and we see safety. And in the best-case scenario, as has been predicted, with 86% certainty, get that out of the moment, by the middle of next year, there'll be 8 vaccines available. Wouldn't that be tremendous? So again, it's looking good. Now, again, one could fall over. You never know with these damn vaccines. We've got to be careful. You know, we need caveats abound in these things, you see. And none of us like this leaking of information ahead of the trial being finished. That's a bad thing, you know. So, again, we just got to wait to see what the data tells us. But we're getting more optimistic all the time, basically.
Well, one of the News Talk listeners, Veronica, asks the question that is asked every time you're on. Would you take the vaccine? And we know the answer. Don't we?
I would volunteer for the trial, Pat. That's how much I believe in these things. I would have gone for the phase one trial at this stage, but absolutely I'd take it, 100%.
Can you ask, Luke, is it possible that the COVID vaccine will be simply added to the flu jab and we just get it every year?
Absolutely, it could be, yes. They're discussing that, actually, to have a double injection. And often vaccines are given together. You see that with childhood vaccines as well. So to simplify things, ultimately, once this... Remember, the virus will go endemic, but it's not going to go away. So every winter or whenever it might be, we probably have to have vaccinations rolled out. And just for convenience, they might give it with the flu vaccine. That's a real possibility.
Would a vaccine work on obese people?
Well, that's the next question. You do see subgroups who don't respond as well, you know, but they try to factor that in with the dose. You know, they might give slightly more, or they'll do a test to see what dose would work in different groups. But I think vaccines do work in obese people, but you might need to maybe increase the dose slightly as one possibility.
Now, you wanted to tell me about what's going on in Slovakia, because it's very interesting and it could be the template for the way forward.
Well, indeed. I mean, what lots of people are talking about now, Pat, is the contact trace isolate business isn't really working, as we know, in Europe. It's failed dismally, hasn't it? Because look at all the case numbers going up. And as we know at the moment, Europe's in a bad place. And that business of testing and, you know, contact tracing is just logistically very difficult. Plan B is to test everybody, remember, because then you don't need to contact trace. Everybody has a test. You can see who's positive, and then they isolate for 2 weeks, and then that's fine, you know. So the question is, how the hell do we do this? You and I have discussed this several times, haven't we, about what the best test is going to be. So the Slovak government has stepped up. They are going to test the entire population, everybody over 10. They've got a population of 5.5 million people, so not that dissimilar to us. And over 2 weekends, beginning October 30th, they're going to test all these people. They've ordered 13 million tests, which will be rolled out, you know, for the entire country. And that's going to be really interesting, Pat, because obviously if you can test everybody, you'll find out who's infected, and then they isolate. And that's a real way to sort of conquer the virus. And it's kind of a pilot study, I guess, to see if it works.
What test are they using, though? Are they using the antigen test, which is not as accurate, although some will claim great accuracy for their antigen test, versus the PCR test?
Yes, the antigen test, exactly. It's much more convenient than the PCR test. You can do it in your house, basically. And of course, you know, as we've been discussing, what will be the best antigen test and so on. They haven't said which one they're going to use yet, mind you, but it is the antigen test. Now, the point here, Pat, is if you get 98-99% accuracy, that's not bad. Now, you know, people talk about false positives and false negatives, but if enough positivity and accuracy is in the test and you test everybody, you may miss a few, you know, obviously, and some may be false negative and some may be false positive, but it's broadly accurate, then that will work, you know. So they're beginning to loosen up the requirement for, say, 99.9% accuracy just because of the contribution this will make to locking the thing down.
Yeah, and they're talking about some sort of testing in schools here as an experiment, whereby everybody going in might get this antigen test on the same principle, I suppose, that you'd catch most of it.
Exactly. Yes, if you catch 98% of it, you're a long way down the track. And trying to contact trace all these people who've been in contact with one case is proving to be tricky. You know, some get through that. Remember, Pat, some people with symptoms are still walking around, which is the real shocker in a way, isn't it? You know, people aren't isolating themselves as they should be. If there's a test and you know you're positive, you're obliged then to stay home, you see. And then that will have a big effect on the viral spread, you see. So this you might call it universal testing, has to be the way forward for so many reasons. Yeah.
Because we've heard from members of the GAA, certainly one prominent member who said, I wouldn't tell anyone if I felt I had it because I'm playing in the, you know, the final of my club or whatever it might be, or my county, and I've done so much work to get to this point and I'm in the final, I'm going to stay stum.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, that is a massive crime in India, Pat. You know, in India, 123 years ago, they passed a law that said if you're knowingly infected with cholera and you go out in the community, you can face a jail sentence because you're putting other people at risk, you know. So what we might envisage is the immunity passport. You have to show you've done the test and show that you're negative, you know, and if you fake it or aren't honest, you're going to face a jail sentence. And this isn't happening at the moment, but that might be the way this would go, to make sure people stay isolated when they're infected. Otherwise, they're putting other people at risk.
Now, there was another story, I saw it, I think, in the Examiner, about breath testing would be more accurate than nasal swabs, and that's using the PCR testing. That's interesting.
That's very interesting. What they're doing there, Pat, is great. They're bringing the virus up with a good, it's not so much breath, it's you're kind of coughing, I suppose, to get the droplets out of your lungs, you know. And instead of capturing with a swab then, you're literally, you know, coughing it up out of your lungs, I guess, and then you're capturing that instead, you see. So that could well replace the swab test. And obviously the swab test is a bit invasive and people don't like it, you know, and there's a question of compliance then with that because it's a bit, you know, unpleasant. If they can replace that swab test with some kind of breath or droplet-based test, that would be very interesting. Several companies are in the middle of this, by the way, of course, and trying to get the best way to do it. So that may be another thing that will emerge in the coming months.
Now, last week we were talking about those long-haul flights and how people got infected. And then, lo and behold, we read about 59 infections linked to a summer flight into Ireland, 7.5-hour flight from the Middle East. And the flight was virtually empty. And yet it ended up, as far as we know, that a minimum of 59 people were infected.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great paper, Pat. That's been flagged all over the world, actually, as a great example of epidemiology. And it was an Irish, you know, flight that came from the Middle East into Ireland, a bit like the one we discussed, a long-haul flight, 7.5 hours. There were 49 people on board and 13 people got infected on that flight and then went on to infect a lot more people. You know, so next was passed on. One single person, Pat, on that flight got infected and infected 25 people in Ireland, four of which were hospitalised and one ended up in the ICU. So again, it just shows you how serious this is, that if you're on a long-haul flight for hours and hours and hours, with the best wind in the world, and infection can spread, and then suddenly these people get off the flight, there's no symptoms, they go into their community, and then 25 people get infected from one person and some end up in hospital. So again, it illustrates really how contagious this virus is. The other concern, Pat, was 9 of the 13 people who were infected were wearing masks on the flight. And that didn't seem to fully protect them. They must have taken them off or touched their faces now and again on the flight. Kind of, it's hard to wear a mask for 7.5 hours, I guess, in that situation. So, but it was a real salutary tale, wasn't it, to say, look, these long-haul flights are places where infections can spread.
Yeah. There was a group travelling together, but they did not sit together in the aircraft because it was only like a fraction, a tiny fraction, maybe 10% of the aircraft seats were occupied. But perhaps they were infected before they got on board. You know, that's something that we can't know.
Trouble. Yeah, they can't really pin that down. Some must have got infected in the lounge when they were meeting before they got on the flight, maybe, you know, as opposed to on the flight itself. But just shows you travel then, either you're gathering before you get on the flight or when you're on the flight for long haul, you're at risk. And airlines must keep this in mind, I guess.
Now, some of the questions coming in. Does Luke know how far we're off having widespread rapid testing? I suppose if we can get a result in 10 minutes, then we can open up again. Is that possibly coming quicker than vaccines, or would people think that that'd be all a waste of money because vaccines will be here?
No, I mean, it's a mystery to me, Pat, why it isn't here, because the virus has been, we've had these antigen tests for months now, various kinds. We've even won in Trinity that we've made ourselves, you know. So I think it needs an awful lot of checks and balances to make sure you've got 98-99% accuracy. They're being trialed all over the place. Now, it has to come soon, Pat. I mean, it's amazing the amount of effort going into it. And this will be here ahead of widespread vaccination, because remember, with the best will in the world, the widespread run of vaccines won't be till well into next year, middle to late next year, you see, before the vaccine is widely used. In the interim, to get back to some kind of normal, widespread testing that's convenient is the answer, isn't it? And you saw that thing in the Boots, Pat. I think you sent it to me. Boots are rolling out a test. It'll take 12 minutes. It's £120, mind you, and it's 97% accurate. Now, if that works out, anybody can go into their pharmacy and buy these tests. Now, whether they should be made free, the government should really make this free to everybody, by the way. But that's an antigen test. It's called Luma-Dix, and that may be the one. You never know. So I've no doubt that when we fast forward, we have to have widespread testing that's convenient, basically, for everybody, is definitely a way out of this.
More text from our News Talk listeners. Ask Luke if it's good news for us. Both myself and my daughter tested negative in March for COVID-19, but antibody tests last month detected antibodies. We both had total loss of taste and smell and were direct contacts of a positive case. So is this good news for us? That's from Sharon.
It is good news. I mean, you see, this is where you see variability in the population, any biological thing. You know, some will have antibodies for months. There was a big study in Iceland that differed to the UK one. They could detect high levels of antibodies 4 months after infection, for example. You know, we think it depends on how sick you are. The more symptoms you have, the more your immune system is kicking off. You know, you're making more antibody then, and that persists for longer. So that's one reason why you see this variation. But having antibody in your system is definitely a good sign.
Now, we have two different views here. I sincerely hope that the news media will be responsible when reporting, because I feel there's so much negativity around vaccines. Well, not on this programme, I hasten to add. Please remind people what TB did to countries. Thank God for that vaccine. Can you ask Luke how we get over all of this negativity? We desperately need to get rid of this dreadful virus. That's one text. But another says, I have a lot of respect for Professor Luke O'Neill, but do not agree with this soon-to-be new vaccine. I won't be taking it. I'll just keep fit and healthy and fight the COVID if I get it. That's from Michael.
That's reasonable to some extent. Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, what are we going to do if people don't take the vaccine? I guess it's there may be mandatory, you never know, that kind of thing. But people have to be convinced, I suppose. In my opinion, you show people data. And you say, look, this is how the vaccine works. It's efficacious and it's safe. Now, please, please take it, you know, for the good of the community kind of thing. But remember, your best friend is your own immune system, and you can fight the virus with your own immune system. But certainly the advice from every health agency in the world will be take these vaccines, provided it passes all the checks and balances, of course.
Yeah. See, it's a bit like, you know, my mask protects you, your mask protects me. My vaccination protects the so-and-so who won't take the vaccine because he's being bloody-minded, because he's depending on the rest of us taking it so that the virus dies and he won't get it, you know.
It's very simple, Pat, in a way. We know we need 70% of the world's population to be either vaccinated or to have had the virus and developed immunity to it to really get out of this problem. You know, 70% is a number, kind of, that's being spoken about, you know. Now, you can get it through natural infection, and then you might get reinfected, as we've been discussing, and you might have a milder disease next time, but you're still spreading it, you know. So the vaccine is the main way. If we want to get out of this, we have to have widespread vaccination. And everybody agrees, all the health agencies in the world, remember, it looks like polio, TB, we limited those hugely through vaccination. This won't be any different.
Professor Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin. Thank you very much. We'll talk.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private. Trusted experts in orthopaedic spine, eye, cancer and cardiology.
This is News Talk.